Hello and welcome to the Next Stage podcast by Web Summit, taking you inside the minds of business leaders and cultural icons from around the world.
I'm really excited about this. This is actually the conversation here at Collision I'm most excited about because I know the least about investing in startups, about venture capital. I think often about the sort of big picture macro view of tech and the really important stuff that's happening down that's getting companies off the ground, I think is an area that everyone in this room would probably benefit from having a better understanding of what's going through all of your minds. Ben and Eric, respectively, general partners at their respective firms, Kosla and Kleiner Perkins. Julia, professor at Harvard Business, but sort of an angel investor, and in your own right, the students you work with, you actually help them get their companies off the ground and help them. So, can you identify at that very early stage, can you know that you're looking at a $1 billion company, and how do you know? And let's go down the line.
Yeah, sure. So I think that at the earliest stages, we are looking for two things. The first is markets, and the second is people. And on the first, is the market sufficiently large that in 5-7 years that it could support a multi-billion-dollar revenue company? And so some markets already exist today, and other markets are to be created. And so I think that's the first thing. And many of the to-be-created companies or markets are actually the largest ones, because social media, for example, wasn't obvious at the time. And I think search was obvious, but it was not obvious that it would be a $500 billion type of company.
Right.
And then the second is around the people. Is the team the right team? Do they have the right backgrounds to really tackle that market? And I think for us, that those are the two main factors that come into play when we look at early-stage companies.
Julia?
So I think of it in a couple different ways. Before Harvard, I was at Akamai early and also at VMware, where they really were disruptive billion-dollar companies in the industry. They were going after were existing industries, but no one really knew how to adopt to new technologies. So seeing an idea in a space that needed to be disrupted was really going to change things. In the case of Akamai, it was a whole new space, the internet. No one knew what to do with it. They were able to have that idea. But going also with the people, it's not just the team and are they the right people and the right qualified backgrounds, but also can they execute and how do they work together as a team? So you can be a great team and have all the expertise in the world, but if you don't know how to actually scale as a team and grow and execute and deliver, you can have the best idea in the world and never go anywhere.
Great question. Thanks, Dylan, for sharing, and then also thanks. So I'm Eric, and I work at a venture capital firm called Kleiner Perkins, and I just wanted to re-echo what Ben mentioned earlier about team and TAM, or the market opportunity. Those are two very critical things that we look at, and I just wanted to add a third T to that, which is timing. We always ask the question when we think about investment opportunities, why now? Why should this company exist now? Why is it advantage to happen now as opposed to 5 years ago or 5 years from now? Because you could have a great idea, and if it's the wrong timing, or you could have a great team, but if they're trying to build something in the wrong timing, it also hurts the chances of creating this very large company, this billion-dollar opportunity. So that's the other third component that we really have to think about as investors to make sure that the timing of the company is advantageous in this exact moment. So why now is the question we always ask.
Do you start from the position of, okay, here's what the market is saying, or here's a market demand, or here's a new market, and let's find the right ideas to fill that demand? Or do you just start with people generally and their ideas and sort of broadly, you know, they come to you with something maybe you've never heard of, and then you go and try and see if the market demand exists? Is it a market consideration? Is it a people consideration? What's square one?
I think it's both.
Okay.
So for us, we approach it from both angles. One is a thesis-driven type of investment. So for example, at our firm, we think a lot about using technology to reinvent social infrastructure. So, for example, 3D printed buildings and eliminating the cost of labor and making basically construction materially much more economical. So there's themes that we look at, and so we try to find companies in those themes. And then separately, there's also entrepreneurs that will pitch us on their own ideas that are great ideas that we had never even thought of, right? And we basically have to see whether we believe that specific product instantiation is going to be a $1 billion revenue type of company.
Right. When you're in the classroom and you're looking at kids when they come in on day one and then when they leave at the end, what have you done to shift their thinking on the process of launching a startup?
Great question. So 90% of the students that come into my course who are actually coming in to build their product in my class, I incubate small companies in my class, have a space and an idea, and they almost always get the problem wrong. So they haven't really thought through the thesis, and they haven't tested enough without building anything first. So initially, they feel they've slowed down too much in my class because I don't let them build anything in the beginning other than prototypes and paper. And they do a lot more research, and almost all of them by the first half of the year, I have them for a whole year, pivot at least two or three times. And they pivot either completely different target audience or persona than they thought, or completely different problem. And the problem, it's not just the space, but it's, we call it blood on the sidewalk. Where is there absolute pain for your target audience that with your product, or all digital for us, are going to solve that pain point? And it takes a lot of iterations and a lot of discovery. So about 80% of the work is discovery and really proving your theory before you build anything. And then by the end, they're building the right thing. And most of them at the end of the year say, if I had started at the beginning of the year, I totally would have built the wrong thing.
Right. So to that point, let's talk about, Eric, the art of the pitch, which is what, and open this up for anyone, what are the number one, two, three things that you can do right, and what is that people do wrong all the time that you wish they didn't do, that you would tell someone to do differently?
That's a good question. I'm gonna answer the easier question, which is...
what do they do right?
Well, if investors are more thesis-driven or more opportunity-driven, I think that it is, to Ben's point, a combination of both, but both are important. For example, we invested in a company called Nest, and it's not like my partners were saying, we gotta find something around thermostats. We're just so passionate about thermostats. We have to, you know, invest in a thermostat company. It wasn't like that at all. But we were very passionate about a larger thesis around sustainability and conservation and efficiency, and that gave us the right mental framework that when we met with Tony Fadell and talked about doing a thermostat company, we were pre-wired to understand and move quickly and be able to react. So I think it's a combination of both. And I would say that the number one advice that I would give to any entrepreneur around a pitch is that it's not this one transactional moment. It's not this, you know, I've never met this firm before, so let me just go and blind or cold call email or have one meeting, and then it's going to be a yes or no, and I'm going to leave with a check. It's not this transactional thing. Fundraising takes months and months and months. I advise entrepreneurs that when they're thinking about fundraising, start the process 6 months in advance. That's when you should be building a relationship. You should be looking to raise when you don't need money, not when you need the money. There's an adage that we like to say quite often around the Valley, which is if you ask for money, you're going to get advice, but if you ask for advice, you'll get money. So that just speaks to the fact that it is a long relationship building process, and that typically leads to the best types of outcomes for fundraising. Fundraising is also this moment in time where it's a huge commitment from a founder to select their investor. In fact, I say it's a bigger commitment than even a marriage, because unlike a marriage, there's no divorce. You can't divorce your investor. They're a part of the company at that point. And therefore, take that process very seriously. Don't think of it as this transactional thing where it's not something also that's a zero-sum game, like, you know, I tricked that investor into investing. I won that round. It's a long, long-term partnership that you're building.
So if a startup entrepreneur comes in and says, look, I have this idea that's germinating in my head, and I think it could be really good, but I don't know how to do X, I don't know how to do Y, I actually haven't quite figured out how to crack, you know, getting up to scale, X, Y, and Z. Is that a more fruitful conversation for you than someone who comes in and pretends that they know exactly what they're doing?
It can be, if it's the right founder. In other cases, I think they just have to do a lot more homework before pitching, because if you're not ready to pitch, oftentimes going to investors too early means that they've formulated a point of view about you and your company, and it's hard to reverse that. And so that's, you got to be ready before you go out and pitch.
Right.
What we talked about on the phone, one of the most common mistakes, at least from Coastal Ventures' perspective, that entrepreneurs make when seeking investment in the seed and Series A stages is there's usually this dialogue that happens over email. So entrepreneurs get an introduction to an investor, and the investor says, do you have an investment presentation that I could study? And then the entrepreneur is thinking, wow, if I can get in front of them, I can pitch and I can impress them, and therefore I'm going to make a much better impression, and therefore my likelihood of investment is higher. And so oftentimes they say, I would prefer to present in person. And then there's this negotiation that happens between the investor and then the entrepreneur of, well, can you send me the deck? And it sort of goes back and forth. So for us, the quality of the deck basically is a prognosticator of the quality of the thinking of the entrepreneur. How clearly can they articulate their ideas? How clearly can they articulate the traction? How clearly can they tell their story in a very simple 7 to 10 slide pitch deck? And if that's high quality, then it's the time is really well spent. And many other times, in the absence of that, many investors will turn down the meeting and say, sorry, I'm not interested, or sorry, you know, please come back to me when you're ready to show me something. And the other thing is that for a lot of entrepreneurs, they don't fully understand that, for at least for Eric and me, Julie has the ability to decide on her own. We have a partnership to go through.
Right.
And so part of it is that when we talk about the company, we're excited about it, and then here's the deck that you can share with your partners. There's other people that we have to present to also. So that's a second layer that really, really comes into play. And I think it's a very common mistake that sort of goes back and forth and back and forth.
So, Julia, what advantages do you have being in this sort of, you know, academic incubator space and not having to sort of be part of a partnership? What are the advantages?
Well, certainly as an angel investor, which I do a lot on the side outside of the classroom, I have the advantage of evaluating the business. Same thing, though. I mean, I'm looking at the deck as well and making sure it's a clear story and that they're going to be compelling beyond when I give them my first check. But I also advise them, and I look for companies where I feel like they're going to take advice when they're going to these guys. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to be credible. I actually give advice of have less than 10 slides, be compelling, but whet their appetite so they want you to come in for the meeting. Don't give them so much that they read the deck and say, forget it, I don't want to go in there. Mm-hmm. And then the other piece of advice is, to the point of the marriage, which I completely agree with, it's not just the check. What does the firm have to offer you? What's their space? Where are they going to open doors for you? How are they going to give you advice after the check? Because once they've invested in you, they are now part of your family. And it's not they're not judging you. They're not, you've already gotten the money. So now focus on, are these the types of partners that you want to work with? So not just sell them on the idea, but sell them on that marriage.
How long should a great pitch last?
I hope that I can get excited by the company in the first minute. I hope that the idea is clearly presented. I hope that the opportunity is clearly excited, that I am just, you know, leaning forward and on the edge within 1 minute. And if it takes longer than that, you know, so be it. But I think the best pitches, it's this very provocative statement that gets you excited. And then you spend the rest of the time diving into the details. But it's certainly not one of those reveals at the end where you're just like left wondering, what is this company? Until the very, very end, you're like, oh, I get it.
Right.
Don't bury the lead. That's right.
Yeah, that works in journalism too. Okay. What is the biggest mistake you see in here startups making here at Collision? And how can that be fixed?
For me, what I see quite often is that a lot of startups think that venture capital is the only route and is the correct route. And many times, probably half the time, venture capital is not the correct route or the only route. And so what I mean by that is there's lots of great businesses that might end up being 30 million revenue businesses annually or 50, $60 million revenue businesses that aren't a good fit for venture capital but are great for the founders and great businesses. And there's nothing wrong with being, you know, having a business that does $60 million in revenue and $30 million in profit or $20 million profit annually. And so oftentimes founders think that I've got to raise venture capital because that's the only way to put myself on the map, but that's not the only way. And so raising venture capital can oftentimes be the wrong thing to do for your company.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing too is that it's important to recognize that not all investors and all firms have the same focus or the same areas of interest. We're pretty transparent about the things that we look at. You can go to, you know, the Coastal website and read all about Ben and all about the things that he's invested in. Same with me. You can go to kpcb.com and read all about what I look at and the companies that I'm interested in. And often, it may be a fantastic investment opportunity, but it's just not suited for the things that I have expertise in and where I could be helpful with, or even with our firm is looking at. So make sure you have the right match between what you're building and the firm that you're talking to.
Can you invest in an idea solely from a pitch deck, or do you have to meet the person? Is the person key? Do you have to have an understanding of who they are, what their personality is, what their work ethic is, or is the primary thing, is it the pitch deck?
No, the primary thing is usually the person.
Yeah.
Or the team. Individual. The team, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's usually not the person, it's actually the team. Because you can be a great founder, but can this founder actually attract great people around them?
Have you guys ever seen someone come in with an idea, they pitched you on it, and you said, look, that's a terrible idea, but I see in you the potential to have a great company, and let's work and figure out how to come up with something else, or go back to the drawing board and come back to me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And there's times when we say that, you know, we love you as a founder, but this is not a space we invest in, and then we watch them, and they sort of did you exceedingly well.
Yeah.
And you sort of have that regret that you never invested in that great founder, but it's because it's not a space that, for example, our firm focuses on.
Right.
And I've done the reverse. I've heard great pitches and great ideas, and met the founders and said, no way, I can't back this person. They're not focused or they have whatever issues. So it's just, it's too much of a risk.
And what happened, you know, this is a concern, I think. Like, what happens when you hear a great idea, you don't like the person that goes away? Do you ever sort of hold on to the idea? I mean, I know you don't take the intellectual property, but do you ever sort of just, does that start to germinate other ideas, if you're being honest?
Your radar goes up, I think, a bit, and you guys probably say the same thing. Then you say, that's an interesting idea. Either I hope I get another pitch like that, or you find out if there's other companies out there doing the same thing.
Okay. You look for other companies that are already in the space.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. Each of you, tell me a company you saw that you didn't initially recognize as a great idea and later understood it was a great idea, but you missed it. And what was it?
I mean, it's going to be hard for Ben to answer that because he's never missed
really
any company ever.
It's going to be really easy.
That'd be really hard for you. You know, like, I'll pick out one that we're super excited and very, very proud to be an investor in, and that's Uber. We joined as an investor a little bit later, and I think it just took us a couple of cycles to understand the size and scale of that opportunity. And I think a lot of investors had that mindset as well, which is like, you know, black car services, that doesn't seem like, to Ben's point, this huge addressable market. You know, taxis even, that doesn't seem huge. But after you really sit down and understand that the vision is around transportation, it's about global transportation, then you're like, oh my gosh, that is an amazing, amazing opportunity. And that's I think it just took us a couple rounds to understand that before we were able to invest. But my favorite Uber stat is that they, at this point, as it, you know, the leader in the rideshare market space, they still only have about 1% of U.S. transportation in terms of the total number of volumes of trips that are happening every day. About 1% of that is capturing Uber, and that just speaks to how big the market opportunity is, but it did take a while for us to understand that.
You answered it exactly for me.
Good.
Look at that. Ben just outsourced it to me.
Well, that's good, because we're literally out of time. Jay, do you have anything?
I'll just throw in Slack. Slack was one that I saw percolating for a while, had a chance in the early, didn't get in when I should have. I'm in now, but it's too late in terms of when I could have
gotten
in before. It's
not too late.
But fascinating product. I didn't think it would get the level of adoption it did. I wish I had gotten in earlier. Happy I'm in now.
Understanding that this whole game and field through your guys' lens is invaluable. I hope it was invaluable for you guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to do it. And thank you guys for coming out.
Thank you guys.
Thanks for listening. If you want to hear more of these topics firsthand, you can hear all about things tech at WebSummit 2020. So be sure to get your ticket today. Visit websummit.com/tickets for more info.